Eugene, thank you all. Now that is quite an army of people we have way back there. All right, thank you all coming out. Now, I got to say, I have received many introductions throughout this campaign. This is the first Shakespearean introduction that I received. And let me thank Matt Keating for his poetry. I don't know that my mere prose can keep up with his poetry, but I will try. Let me also say a word of thanks to Senator Jeff Merkley. My understanding is Jeff is in Washington today, but I do want to thank him for being the only member of the United States Senate to have the guts to stand up to the establishment and support our campaign. When we began this campaign, it's almost a year ago, we had no money, we had no name recognition outside of Vermont, and we were considered a fringe candidacy by the punditry and the media and all of the experts. Not only were we taking on Wall Street, taking on corporate America, taken on wealthy campaign contributors and super PACs, taken on the corporate media. We were also, in Secretary Clinton's campaign, taking on the entire Democratic establishment and the most powerful political organization in this country. Well, a lot has happened in a year. When we began this campaign, we were over 60 points behind Secretary Clinton in national polls. In the last few weeks, some of the polls had us ahead or a few points down. Over the last many months, we have won 17 primaries and caucuses throughout this country. And some 1,350 delegates to the Democratic National Convention. And maybe most importantly, and I hope that delegates going to the Democratic Convention pay heed to this, in every national poll done in the last month, we are defeating Donald Trump by much greater margins than Hillary Clinton. USA Today poll, Sanders 15 points up, GWU 10 points, Fox 14 points, CBS 17 points, McClatchy 20. In other words, we all agree, this is one thing that Secretary Clinton and I do agree on, we must not have a Republican in the White House. But I think the evidence is overwhelming that you are looking at the strongest Democratic candidate. And the reason for that is that our campaign is able to reach out beyond the Democratic base and win the support of millions of independents. And the other reason, which I think is obvious, and you are seeing it here today, this is the campaign that is generating excitement, enthusiasm, and a large voter turnout. The truth is, Republicans win elections when the people are demoralized and give up and voter turnout is low. Progressives and Democrats win elections when people are prepared to stand up, fight back, and that's what this campaign is about. Now, my view, if you take a hard look at the Republican agenda, it is hard to imagine anybody voting for that agenda. Now, unfortunately, the media does not often take a look at that agenda, so I will do that today. Now, different Republicans may have nuanced differences, but bottom line is virtually all of them, at a time of massive income and wealth inequality, their response is to provide hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the top 0.2% by repealing the estate tax. In a country in which 47 million people are living in poverty, billionaires like Donald Trump do not need tax breaks. But that's not all. Republicans want to give huge tax breaks to people who don't need it, but at the same time, most of them want to make devastating cuts to the programs that are keeping millions of people alive. Today, all over this country, in Oregon, in Vermont, all over this country, we've got disabled veterans and seniors trying to make it on $10,000 or $11,000 a year Social Security. Republicans want to cut Social Security. Republicans want to cut Medicare. They want to cut Medicaid. They want to cut federal aid to education. They want to cut food stamps for hungry children. They want to throw millions of people off of the Affordable Care Act, and they have no substitute for those millions of people who will lose their health insurance. Let's be clear. When you're throwing millions of people off of health insurance, some of those people will certainly die, and many others will become much sicker and suffer in a way that they did not have to. But that's what they want to do. Eliminate the Affordable Care Act. Millions of people lose their health insurance. Not a whit of concern for those people. At a time when we are seeing an increasingly corrupt campaign finance system, what Republicans want to do is not overturn Citizens United. You know what they want to do? They want to end all campaign finance regulations so that billionaires can directly fund their candidates. You know, and I think we are reaching the day when you're going to have members of Congress with patches on their jackets, sponsored by the Koch brothers, sponsored by ExxonMobil, sponsored by the Pfizer drug company, because that is where the Republican Party is going. Now, right now, as a member of the Senate Committee on the Environment, I can tell you what all of you already know. And that is climate change is causing devastating problems in our country and the world. But you have a Republican Party that is rejecting science. Not one of the many Republicans who ran for president even acknowledged the reality of climate change, let alone a desire to transform our energy system. All over this country, you're seeing Republicans talking about family values. What their family values mean is that no woman here in Oregon, in America, should have the right to control her own body. And what Republican family values also mean is that our gay brothers and sisters should not have the right to get married. We disagree. This is a fringe agenda. And the problem we're having now is not, in my view, that the Republicans are winning elections. The problem is that the Democrats are losing elections. In November of 2014, the midterm elections, 63% of the American people did not vote. 80% of young people and low-income people did not vote. And I think the reason for that is the Democratic Party up to now has not been clear about which side they are on the major issues facing this country. And here is the truth. You can't be for Wall Street and for the working people of this country. You cannot be for the drug companies and for the needs of senior citizens and veterans. You cannot be on the side of those workers who have lost their jobs because of disastrous trade agreements and support those corporations who have thrown millions of our workers out on the street. And the Democratic Party has to reach a fundamental conclusion. Are we on the side of working people or big money interests? Do we stand with the elderly, the children, the sick and the poor, or do we stand with Wall Street speculators and the drug companies and the insurance companies? Now, our job is not just to revitalize the Democratic Party, not only to open the doors to young people and working people. Our job is to revitalize American democracy. Today in America, not only do we have a corrupt campaign finance system where billionaires are buying elections, we also have a political system which in many respects makes it hard for people to participate. I want to see this country have one of the highest voter turnout rates in the world, not one of the lowest. And that is why, in my view, the Democratic Party has got to be very clear. We need automatic voter registration. All over this country, we got Republican governors trying to make it harder for people to vote. Our job is make it easier, bring more people into the system. And that means if you are 18 years of age in this country, you are registered to vote. End of discussion. In those states where it's applicable, we need same-day registration. We need open primaries. And I'll tell you what else the Democratic Party needs. Turns out, sadly, that the poorest states in this country, many in the South, where people are suffering without health insurance, without jobs, without access to a decent education for their kids, in many of those states, they are controlled by right-wing Republicans. And the truth is that the Democratic Party has turned its back on many of those states. We need a 50-state strategy. Yeah. We need to plant the flag of progressive politics in every state in this country. It's great that the Democrats do well in New England and the East Coast, do well here in the West Coast, do well in some states in the Midwest. That's fine. But you can't turn your back on working people and low-income people and children and the poor in 25 states in this country. We've got to fight for every one of those states. Now, the reason that our campaign is doing as well as it is because we are doing something quite unusual in American politics. We are telling the truth. And the truth is not always pleasant. It's not always something you want to hear in your personal lives or in the political life of the country. But unless we deal with the hard realities facing this country and face up to them, we're going to go nowhere in a hurry. So here's the truth. The truth is, as I mentioned a moment ago, we've got a corrupt campaign finance system undermining American democracy. And together, we're not only going to overturn this disastrous Citizens United, we're going to move toward public funding of elections. Somebody wants to run for office, I don't care if they're progressive, conservative, moderate. You should not have to beg millionaires for campaign contributions. But it's not only a corrupt campaign finance system, it is a rigged economy. Here's another truth. You don't see it on TV too often, but it is a truth nonetheless. And that is, we have more income and wealth inequality in this country than at any time since 1928, and it is worse here than in almost any major country on earth. In my view, America is not supposed to be about the top 0.1% owning almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. America is not supposed to be about 20 of the wealthiest people owning more wealth than the bottom 150 million Americans, half of our population. Now, you want to hear about a rigged economy. What a rigged economy is about is one family, the Walton family, who owns Walmart. Not only does this family own more wealth than the bottom 40% of our people, this family pays their employees wages that are so low that many of those workers are forced to go on food stamps or Medicaid. A rigged economy is when the middle class of this country pays higher taxes to subsidize the workers of the wealthiest family in this country. And I say to the Walton family, the wealthiest family in this country and the major beneficiary of welfare, Waltons, get off of welfare, pay your workers a living wage. This campaign is about thinking big, not small. It's about thinking outside of the box, outside of the status quo. It is about asking why it is that millions of our people today are working two or three jobs just to cobble together the income and the health care that they need. It is about asking why mom is working, dad is working, and the kids are working, and yet together they're bringing in less disposable income today than a family did with a one breadwinner 40 years ago. This campaign is asking, how does it happen that despite an explosion of technology and worker productivity, 58% of all new income is going to the top 1%? This campaign is asking, how does it happen that despite a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires, we have 47 million people in this country living in poverty? What this campaign is about, and we say it loudly and proudly, we are going to create an economy that works for all of us, not just the 1%. Now, what does that mean? It means that when every psychologist in the world who studies the issue tells us that the most important years of human development are 0 through 4, we are going to have a high-quality child care pre-K system for our youngest Americans. It is about understanding that millions of working people cannot make it on $9, $10, $11 an hour. We need to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour. It is about understanding that women are sick and tired of making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men. And that I know every man here will stand with the women in the fight for pay equity. It is about understanding that in Oregon, over 180,000 children are living in poverty. That nearly 20,000 public school students under the age of 18 are homeless in Oregon. And that a quarter of the children in this great state live in households without adequate access to food. What this campaign is about is changing our national priorities. No, we're not going to give more tax breaks to multinational corporations and billionaires. We're going to demand that they start paying their fair share of taxes. What this campaign is about is understanding that our disastrous trade policies over the last 30, 40 years have cost us millions of decent-paying jobs. NAFTA, CAFTA, permanent normal trade relations with China. Those have led to the shutdowns of tens of thousands of factories in America, where workers here are thrown out in the street as companies move to low-wage places all over the world. And one of the many differences of opinion that Secretary Clinton and I have opposed every one of these disastrous trade agreements. She has supported almost every one of these agreements. If corporations want us to purchase the products that they make, the time is long overdue for them to start manufacturing those products here in Oregon, in Vermont, and all over this country. I was in Flint, Michigan a couple of months ago, and what I saw and heard in Flint, Michigan was almost impossible to believe that it was occurring in the United States of America in the year 2016. And that is, children were suffering cognitive brain damage because they were drinking water with excessive levels of lead in it. But it is not just Flint, Michigan. All over this country, there are communities struggling with clean water. There are communities struggling with antiquated wastewater plants. Our roads, our bridges, our airports, our rail system in many parts of this country are deteriorating. We have got to understand that real unemployment in this country is not 5%. It is double that, close to 10%. We need a massive federal jobs program which puts American workers back to work. And the way we do that most quickly is by rebuilding our crumbling infrastructure. Think outside of the box. Ask yourselves why we have more people in America in jail than any other country on earth. Think about why so many people's lives are rotting away in jail cells all over America. And one of the reasons for that is that we have youth unemployment rates of 40, 50, 60% in communities throughout this country. Now, I have a very simple idea, and that is that maybe, just maybe, we should be investing in our young people in jobs and education. Not in jails or incarceration. Brothers and sisters, we have a broken criminal justice system, and together we are going to reform that broken system. Now, I was a mayor in Burlington, Vermont for 8 years. Got to know a lot of the police officers, work with police officers all over this country. Vast majority of police officers are honest, hardworking people trying to do a very difficult job. But, like any other public official, if a police officer breaks the law, that officer must be held accountable. In local police departments all over this country, we have got to begin demilitarizing those departments. They should not be looking like occupying armies. Police departments have got to be part of the communities they serve. We have got to make local police departments reflect the diversity of the communities they serve. We have got to end corporate ownership of jails and detention centers. That is a perverse incentive to get more people in jail. We want fewer people in jail. Our police culture has got to understand that lethal force is the last response, not the first response. We have got to rethink the so-called war on drugs. Turns out that for the last 30 years, millions of Americans have received police records for possession of marijuana. And this is serious business, because if you're a kid going out looking for a job and your potential employer asks you, have you ever been arrested? Well, yes, sir, I have. you may not get that job when you really need that job. Right now, today, under the Federal Controlled Substance Act, marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug right next to heroin. And that is why I have introduced legislation to take marijuana out of the Federal Controlled Substance Act. But when we talk about drugs in this country, this is a crisis situation because we have an epidemic in my state and all over this country regarding opiate addiction and heroin addiction. Cheap heroin is flooding the streets of America. I was told, if you could believe it, that in Baltimore, Maryland, I don't know if this is true, they say that 10% of the people there are addicted to heroin. Tens of thousands of people. Now, if we are going to get a handle on this crisis, there is one principle that we have got to understand, and that is we will not be successful in treating addiction or substance abuse unless we understand this is a health issue, not a criminal issue. And what we also have got to address is that we have today a crisis in mental health treatment. All over this country, I get calls in my office. Other senators do the same. People are worried about family members. They're worried about suicides. They're worrying about people committing terrible atrocities. People want to get off the addictions they have, and yet they cannot find the treatment they need when they need it at a cost they can afford. We need a revolution in mental health treatment in this country. We need to make mental health treatment available to people when they need it, today, not 6 months from now. This campaign is going to win because we are listening to ordinary people, not just wealthy campaign contributors. We are listening to young people. And one of the really gratifying aspects of this campaign is when we began, many of the pundits and all of the political science were saying, well, you know, young people, you know, they're busy worrying about their video games and other types of similar activity, but they're not going to get involved in politics or in government issues. Well, it turns out that those experts were not quite right. Because what we are seeing all across this country is young people understanding that they are the future of this country, understanding that decisions being made in Washington today will impact them for the rest of their lives. And what they are saying is we are the future and we damn well want to help shape that future. And what young people are saying, two things, well, many more things, but two major things, saying a lot. But here's point number one. They are asking a very simple but profound question. How does it happen that the young generation today, if we do not change our economy, will likely have a lower standard of living than their parents for the first time in the modern history of our country? Now, my family never had any money, but my parents worked hard so that their kids would be able to do better than they. Millions of American families did the same. That is called the American dream. Parents work hard so their kids do better. That dream of hard work so your kids can do better is what this country is about. We together will not allow that American dream to die. And there's another issue, and again, I beg of you to think outside of the box. Give yourselves options that you don't necessarily see on TV. Ask yourself this question. How does it happen that when young people do what their parents tell them to do, what their teachers tell them to do, what their community tells them to do, and that is go out and get the best education that you can. Young people are doing that, and then they are finding themselves $30,000, $50,000, $70,000 in debt. I have talked to doctors, $300,000 in debt, dentists, $400,000, kids who drop out of college after 2 years, $60,000 in debt. Talk to a guy in Nevada. He's been paying off his student debt for 25 years. He's more in debt today than he was when he took his loans out. Think outside of the box. We want to have the best educated workforce in the world. We want all of our people who have the ability and the desire to get as much education as they can. We should not be punishing people for getting an education. We should be rewarding them. You know, thinking outside of the box, 50 years ago, if you had a high school degree, you were doing pretty well. Likelihood is you can go out and get a middle-class job, earn a good living. The world has changed. The economy has changed. Technology has changed. And education must change with that. And that is why I believe that when we talk about public education today, it is not good enough to talk about just first grade through 12th grade. That was great 30, 50 years ago. Today, when we talk about public education, we've got to be talking about making public colleges and universities tuition free. This is not a radical idea. It's an idea that will happen. Our job is to make it happen sooner than later. If Germany, if Scandinavia, if other countries around the world can invest in their young people so they can get the best education available without leaving school in debt, we in the United States can do the same. Anybody here struggling with student debt? Welcome to the club. Millions of Americans are in exactly your boat. Now, what we have got to do right now to deal with student debt is to say to all of those people carrying that debt, you must be able to refinance your loans at the lowest interest rates you can find. And that will mean a very significant reduction in the student debt burden. Now, I am criticized all of the time for thinking too big, too radical. And people say, hey, Bernie, you know, you're Santa Claus, you're a nice guy. Giving these guys free tuition in public colleges and universities. You're a nice guy. You're going to lower student debt in America. wonderful person you are. How are you going to pay for this? I will tell you how we pay for it. And this is called thinking outside of the box. Somehow, 8 years ago, when the greed and recklessness and illegal behavior on Wall Street nearly destroyed this economy, Wall Street went to the Congress and said, oh, please bail us out. And against my vote, Congress did that. Well, today, Wall Street is doing just fine. And I think now is the time to impose a tax on Wall Street speculation. That one tax will bring in more than enough money to make public colleges and universities tuition-free and substantially reduce student debt. If this country could bail out Wall Street, it is Wall Street's time to help the working families of this country. This campaign is listening to the Latino community. There are 11 million undocumented people in this country. Many of them are being exploited on the job because when you have no legal rights, your employer can do anything he wants to you and you have no recourse. You can't stand up. And that is why together we are going to pass comprehensive immigration reform legislation and a path towards citizenship. This campaign, and this is listening to the African American community. And what they are asking is a very simple and honest and straightforward question. And that is, how does it happen that we could spend trillions of dollars on a war in Iraq that we never should have gotten into? A war that I not only voted against but helped lead the opposition to. But what African Americans are asking, how can we spend trillions on a war there when we apparently don't have the money to rebuild inner cities throughout America? I was in Detroit, Michigan. Their public school system is on the verge of financial collapse. I was in Baltimore, tens of thousands of people addicted to heroin. I was in Chicago, people paying 40, 50, 60% of their limited incomes for housing because there is no affordable housing. If we can rebuild communities in Iraq and Afghanistan, we damn well can rebuild inner cities in America. This campaign is listening to a people whose suffering gets almost no voice and no hearing at all, and that is the Native American people. All of you know that from before this country became a country, when the first settlers came here, Native Americans were lied to, they were cheated, and treaties they negotiated were broken. The Native American community has given us so much that we cannot ever repay the debt of gratitude that we have toward those people. They have taught us, among many other things, that as human beings, we are part of nature. We must coexist with nature. and that the human species will not survive if we continue destroying nature. But today, despite all that they have given us on reservations throughout this country and in Native American communities, unemployment and poverty rates off the charts, suicide rates for young people at a horrific level, we will, if elected president, change our relationship to the Native American people. Climate change is real. Donald Trump is not quite right when he thinks it is a hoax developed by the Chinese. He is not even close to being right. Climate change is real, and for the sake of our kids and our grandchildren, we are going to have the courage to take on the fossil fuel industry. And tell them that their short-term profits are not more important than the future of this planet. I am very proud to have introduced the most comprehensive climate change legislation in the history of the United States Senate. And I believe, because we are dealing, in my view, with a planetary environmental crisis, we have got to act boldly and aggressively. Or else we are going to see more drought, more floods, more extreme weather disturbances, more destruction of the oceans, more rising sea levels, more international conflict as people fight over limited natural resources. Now, that is why in my legislation we have a tax on carbon. If we are serious about cutting carbon emissions, we need a tax on carbon. I would hope very much that Secretary Clinton would show the courage to join me and fight for a tax on carbon. And by the way, when we talk about environmental crises, this water issue is another crisis that we're going to have to deal with. All over this country, all over the world, there is a growing struggle for clean drinking water, and that is why I believe we have got to end fracking. And I would hope that Secretary Clinton changes her view and supports me in the need to end fracking. There is one country in the industrialized world, one wealthy country, that does not guarantee health care to all people. You are living in it. Now, it is hard for me to understand if the United Kingdom, France, Germany, Holland, Scandinavia, Canada, every major country on earth can guarantee health care to all of their people, rich or poor. I don't understand why the United States cannot do the same. Now, the Affordable Care Act has done some very good things, but we have got to go further. Today, 29 million Americans have no health insurance. Many of you are underinsured with high deductibles and copayments. And all of us are being ripped off by the greed of the pharmaceutical industry. You want to hear crazy? Crazy is one out of five Americans getting a prescription from their doctor and not being able to afford that prescription. crazy is senior citizens in Oregon and in Vermont cutting their pills in half because they don't have the money to afford the medicine they need. Crazy is last year the three top drug companies made $45 billion in profit. The United States has got to join the rest of the industrialized world. We need a Medicare for all single-payer program. Now, Secretary Clinton may not believe that the American people have the guts to take on the insurance companies or take on the drug companies. I disagree. We can do it. Everybody here knows that real change in this country has never come from the top on down. It has always come from the bottom on up. That is the history of America. Well over 100 years ago, when workers in Oregon, Vermont, all over this country were being ruthlessly exploited, when they were working 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, when children were working in factories or in the fields, working people stood up and they said, you know what? We're not beasts of burden. We're human beings. We want dignity. We're going to form trade unions. And the trade union movement has helped develop the middle class of this country. Nobody gave it to those workers. They stood and fought for that. 200 years ago, in the midst of the abomination of slavery, African Americans and their allies said, the day will come, and we're going to make that day come sooner or later, where we're going to end not only slavery, but segregation and racism and discrimination and bigotry. And millions of people, decade after decade, stood up, fought back, went to jail, were killed, were beaten, were lynched. But they said, we will create a non-racist society. It is easily forgotten, that 100 years ago today in America, women did not have the right to vote, did not have the right to get the education or the jobs they wanted. This is less than 100 years ago. Society had determined, the establishment had determined, that a woman's place was in the house having babies. But women said, no. And women had the courage to go on hunger strikes, go to jail. Some of them died in the struggle. And they and their male allies said that in America, women will not be second-class citizens. That's how change takes place. If we were here 10 years ago, no time at all, we were here in this beautiful park, somebody jumps up and says, you know, Bernie, I think that in the year 2015, gay marriage will be legal in 50 states in this country. Now, if somebody said that, 10 years ago, as sure as heck, person next to him would have said, you are crazy. What are you smoking? But what happened is the gay community and their straight allies stood up, fought back, and they said that in America, and they did this against incredible hatred, hatred to which we've seen today in North Carolina and Mississippi. They did this, and they said that in America, people will have the right to love whomever they want, regardless of their gender. That's how change comes about. If we were here, let me give you an even more contemporary example. If we were here 5 years ago, and somebody jumps up and says, you know, Bernie, this federal minimum wage of $7.25, that's a starvation wage. We have got to raise that federal minimum wage to $15 an hour. Person next to her would have said, 15 bucks an hour? You want to more than double the minimum wage? You are out of your mind. You're thinking too big. You're crazy. You're too radical. Maybe we can get 9 bucks an hour, maybe 10, 11 bucks, 15, too high. But then what happened is 2 years ago in Seattle, 15 bucks an hour. San Francisco, Los Angeles, 15 bucks an hour. California, New York State, your state moving in the right direction. 15 bucks an hour. So what is the point of my short historical lesson? It is a very simple point. The establishment will always tell us that real change is impossible. It can't happen. Don't think big. Think small, think incrementally. You really have no power. Not much you guys can do. All right, I like that. Now, I myself can't phrase it exactly like that. That's not bad. But here's what the story is and what's going on in this country, which is what today is about, why the thousands of people are here today, and we're seeing crowds like this all over America. This is what's going on. People are catching on. They are catching on that the choice that we face as Americans is not a debate over whether we cut health care or whether we cut food stamps or education. That is not our choice. Our choice is whether we tell the billionaires they're going to start paying their fair share of taxes. The American people all over this country are catching on. We do not have to accept the grotesque levels of income and wealth inequality we now see. We do not have to see the middle class continue to decline, and almost all new income and wealth going to the top 1%. We do not have to see women making 79 cents on the dollar compared to men. We do not have to accept institutional racism and having more people in jail than any other country. We do not have to be the only major country on earth without paid family and medical leave. We do not have to be the only major country that does not guarantee health care for all. We can be the country that leads this world in saving the planet and transforming our energy system. None of this stuff is radical. None of this stuff is not supported by a majority of the American people. What this campaign is about is saying that now is the time to think big, not small. That now is the time not just to elect a new president, but to transform America. That now is the time to create a government that works for all of us, not just the 1%. On May 17th, there is going to be a very important primary here in the state of Oregon. And obviously, your early voting and your mail-in ballots have begun immediately. Here's the story. What we have found out during this campaign is when voter turnout is high, we win. When voter turnout is low, we lose. Now, we have already won 17 primaries and caucuses all over this country. All over this country, states have said, we are tired of establishment politics and establishment economics. We are prepared for the political revolution. On May 17th, let us have a huge voter turnout here in Oregon. Let this great state go forward with the political revolution. Thank you all very much.